If you're a classical music fan, you'll want to make sure to hear Fresh Air with Terry Gross following Film Week at noon here on KPCC. Nate Evangelino, Michael Tilson Thomas, who's the conductor of the San Francisco Symphony, but I remember as a kid when he was working with the LA Phil. Michael Tilson Thomas is receiving a Kennedy Center Lifetime Artistic Achievement Award. And on the next Fresh Air, Michael Tilson Thomas, a new recipient of that honor, will be on the program. It's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, special guest, San Francisco Symphony conductor Michael Tilson Thomas, a North Hollywood boy made very, very good in the world of music. Coming up next hour, it's Film Week, of course, our critics to review the newest animated film adapted from a toy line, Playmobil, the movie, and Felicity Jones and Eddie Redmayne work together again, starring in the historic drama action film The Aeronauts. Film Week at 11 here on KPCC. Well, it is, it's a very good time at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, but also a tremendous challenge with the trade war going on with China. China, of course, the biggest exporter of goods through the ports of Los Angeles. But the scale of the ports are massive. And we're very pleased to have with us the executive directors of both of the sister ports, Mario Cordero, executive director of the Port of Long Beach, and Gene Soroka, executive director of the Port of Los Angeles. Gentlemen, good to have you both with us today. Why don't I start with you, Gene, because you're right here with me, and just ask you first about where this port complex of these two ports figures in to the national picture. Is it still about 40% of imports come through this port complex?
That's right, Larry. And the cargo that traverses through the Port of Los Angeles reaches each and every one of our 435 congressional districts in the nation. So this truly is a conversation of national significance.
All right. One of the big issues going on, I recently took a boat tour of the Port of Long Beach. My mother lives there, and so residents were able to sign up for these free boat trips. And I went on it with her just a couple months ago. And Mario, I wanted to ask you about some of the environmental things, because one of the things I thought was fascinating is one of the newer piers there has a fully robotic equipment that's used to unload the ships there and move cargo around. Fascinating technology.
Well, first of all, Larry, thank you for having me on your show. It's always a pleasure. But with regard to the terminal you're making reference, yes, that's our Long Beach Container Terminal, our automated terminal, and again, state-of-the-art terminal, which, of course, is going to increase tremendous growth and at the same time reduce emissions by half. So it gives you an indication in terms on the environmental front, what we're doing here at the Port of Long Beach to move forward technology and state-of-the-art infrastructure to not only grow our business, but again, the very important topic of reducing emissions.
And the port complex is the biggest stationary polluter in Southern California. So we should talk, and Gene, maybe you talk from the LA perspective here. What are the changes, everything from hookup of the ships that come in to automation of the different terminals? What are the things that you're doing trying to cut emissions?
Yeah, dating back to the year 2006, the two ports combined for an effort with our community members to create the world's first clean air action plan. And the idea was to see what we could do collectively to reduce emission and source categories and make the port complex a better community member. Since then, we've reduced diesel particulate matter by nearly 90%, nitrogen oxide by 60%, sulfur oxide by 98%, and greenhouse gases in double-digit format, all while the volume at the port that creates 1 in 9 jobs here in Southern California had increased by about 26%. And you referenced alternative marine power or shore plug-in. These massive ships come into our port, turn off all their auxiliary engines, and plug into our local electrical grid, cutting thousands of tons of emissions per ship call. In addition, we've introduced a clean truck program, which will go through its next iteration coming up here in the year 2020, and other cleaner equipment, Tier 4 and Tier 4 Plus, that burn much more efficiently than their predecessor equipment pieces.
Is every one of your peers in LA plug-in at this point, or are some still the ships reliant on their diesel generators to make power?
Every one of our container terminals has the plug-in capabilities for the ships coming across the Pacific.
All right. Is that true in Long Beach as well, Mario Cordero?
And that's correct, Larry. The same for Long Beach.
So are all the ships that are coming in equipped with that technology, or do some of them not have the ability to plug in?
Well, certainly with regard to the container vessels, the case is that they're fully equipped, again, in terms of taking advantage of our shore power infrastructure. The challenge really comes to some of our other vessels, and again, on both sides of the bridge here, Port of LA, Port of Long Beach, with regard to what we call the tanker bulk vessels, liquid and break bulk vessels, and the ro-ro vessels. So I think on that front, again, there's a continuing movement to make sure that in the future we get to a point, and as Gene referenced, we've done a great collaborative partnership here in terms of going to the goal of zero emission when it comes to cargo handling equipment and trucks. So I think that's the topic that, again, is a leading conversation that puts us as leaders in terms of sustainable development and getting to the goal of zero emissions with regard to harmful emissions that may come from port operations.
We've got a rare opportunity here with the executive directors of both of the neighbor ports, making the largest port complex in the United States. Total tonnage coming through the ports, representing 40% of U.S. imports. I'd be interested with hearing your questions of our guests. Any questions you have about environmental evolution of the port complex, the new challenge with trade, particularly with tariffs involving the U.S.'s biggest trading partner in China. By far, the most goods coming from any country come from China through this port complex. If you'd like to talk about the labor issues, because, of course, as more automation is introduced to the ports, that has an effect on what are very high-paying jobs at the port complex. 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. You'd mentioned, Gene Ziroka, Port of L.A., about the shift in the trucks to natural gas-powered, eventually the goal for them to be all-electric vehicles. And the price tag, I think, was like $14 billion to do that. It's absolutely massive. So who's paying for that conversion?
That's the question at hand today. We've done a great job, I think, as a state and a city, as well as the two ports, of trying to create a pool of money for incentive dollars to commercialize newer and cleaner equipment. But this is really where we're going to be threading the needle from very far away. Technology is in nascent stages today. Our two mayors of Long Beach and Los Angeles resolved that by the year 2035, we will be in a zero emissions heavy-duty truck environment. By the year 2030, our marine terminal equipment will be in a zero emissions environment. So it's on us now and our stakeholder groups to work very closely with the original equipment manufacturers and their tiered suppliers to show that we're a good customer. And we have a vision to create a market maker concept. Alone, we can't do this. But if we band together with other cities and ports to show the manufacturing community that we will have the buying power necessary to commercialize this equipment and put it out to market at a fair price, that's the goal and objective we have today.
Now, at this point, though, where's the technology? Do you have battery-powered vehicles that can carry the kinds of loads that are talked about here, or is this going to require next generation of battery power?
It's still early days. We've got a great partner in Toyota that has developed the hydrogen fuel cell technology in the passenger car Mirai, which has now been translated to the heavy-duty truck. We will have about a dozen of those in practice very soon to see what we can test as far as the duty cycle and how they can haul this cargo around. There are several battery renditions of trucks, but the batteries weigh a lot. And to combine that with cargo has been a challenge thus far. But nonetheless, we're working very closely with these manufacturers to show that we have combined 15,000 acres of a test lab so the companies can come here, test their equipment, take that back to the scientists and technologists, and continue to improve upon this technology.
Well, and I assume a fair number of the trucks that are picking up at the port are heading out on long hauls. So the whole issue of, whether it's fuel cell, whether it's battery battery-powered trucks, you got to figure out an infrastructure if they're going out of the region.
That's correct also. So one of the recent projects that we've developed in concert with the state of California is called the Shore to Store Project. And it's a combination of the ports working together with Kenworth, Toyota, Shell, to manage both infrastructure as well as the physical movement of cargo. And we'll take that data to see how effective we are and where improvements need to be made.
We're talking with the executive directors of the ports of our region, Gene Soroka, from whom you just heard, Port of LA executive director, and Mario Cordero, executive director of the Port of Long Beach. A chance for you to ask questions of our guests, rare opportunity to have the heads of both of these ports in the port complex together. 866-893-KPECC, the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. You could also tweet your question at AirTalk to let us know what you'd like us to ask of our guests. Mario Cordero, given the owner-operator framework for so many of these truck drivers, how would they possibly be able to absorb the cost of fuel cell or battery-powered trucks to get to zero emissions?
Well, number one, Larry, in reference to your prior question, the technology is here. I think the challenge for us is, again, to make sure that it's commercially available in a cost-effective manner. And that, again, in the coming years, as Gene referenced, the goal is 2035 as it relates to trucks. And in fact, we have some demonstration projects right now, both on the fuel cell and electrical truck level, in terms of how we move that needle. But in terms of the independent truck operator or owner-operator, you know, we've done this before. In other words, in 2006, the two ports collaborated, what was known then as the 2006 Cleaner Action Plan, the transition trucks to a more friendly fuel, which lowers, of course, at the time we were talking about low sulfur diesel and, of course, the entry to natural gas. So we're going to do what we did that was very successful back then, is for the two ports to come together and advocate for funding for transition to this new technology so that the stakeholders don't bear the cost, or at least the extreme cost of what this is. And as to the independent operator, again, we recognize the challenges there. And for that matter, you know, you referenced the clean truck rate earlier, but part of that is to raise that type of funding to assist and make that transition slash incentives to make that transition with the truck operators and the truck industry overall.
All right, let's take a listener call. This comes from Alicia in Long Beach. You're on Air Talk.
Yes, my question was regarding the unforeseen consequences to small businesses in the Long Beach and surrounding area, dealing with automation and how that would affect the workers if it did go to full automation and those fairly high-paying jobs were no longer available. I mean, everything from real estate agents to restaurant owners, I think, will be affected as the community dollar sort of shrinks.
Yeah, it's a great question because, as you say, this is a highly paid workforce. They patronize local businesses. Those dollars get spent within the local economies of the port region. Gene Soroka, Port of LA, your response to that.
Yeah, we've had this conversation for some time now, and even in the face of having an automated terminal in Los Angeles and one in Long Beach, over the last 2 years, we have hired 6,000 new longshore members because the cargo has grown so much. You could make an argument that some of that hiring practice should have been done a little bit earlier, but the fact of the matter is that between the two ports, the growth of the marketplace, save the tariff discussion, which we'll touch on later, has increased jobs. Now, what we need to do, and what some of our community members, elected officials have posed to us, is we need to have a longer-term look at what the future of work is going to be. And I think it's very important for the industry to look at forecasting and how many jobs are going to be required of what skill sets, how we can retrain, upskill, and reskill current workers, and what we're going to do to reach deep into our middle schools and our high schools to get younger folks involved in what could be great careers in and around the supply chain. So Armageddon is not going to happen. It's very expensive to automate. Only 5% of the world's ports and terminals are automated today. There is some use for it. There is some investment that has looked pretty good. But at this juncture, the skilled workforce that we have today is the best in the business.
Well, and even with, though, retraining, things like that, there are just not a lot of jobs for people who don't have college degrees, or for people with college degrees at six-figure levels, the kinds of salaries that people make doing longshore work. And, it, you know, as you know, often this work runs in families. People grow up around it. It's, you know, they're in the local area exposed to this growing up. It would seem that's all going to change. So there's a cultural effect, too.
There's a cultural effect. There'll be more work around software and folks who need to be trained on the computer skills, but the physical movement of cargo, we believe, will continue in a very strong fashion. And it's on us to make sure that that job of the future is approachable by folks that want a career in that area. And that's why we are developing one of the nation's first workforce training and development centers in concert with organized labor, universities, colleges, and community groups to forward and advance that proposition.
Gene Ciroccas is Executive Director of the Port of Los Angeles. Mario Cordero, Executive Director of the Port of Long Beach, with us. Just to update you on the tragic story coming out of Pensacola, Florida, a U.S. official says the Florida Naval Station shooting suspect from earlier today was an aviation student from Saudi Arabia, and authorities are investigating if the shooting was terrorism-related. Military from around the world attend the Naval Air Station in Pensacola. The shooter opened fire in a classroom building on Friday morning. The attack left four people dead, including the assailant, and multiple people have been wounded. It's the second shooting at a U.S. Navy base this week after the one at Pearl Harbor a couple of days ago. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3. I'll be back in less than 2 minutes. We're fewer than 20 minutes away from Film Week on 89.3. Our critics are going to be talking about all the week's new movies. And if we got some time after the reviews, we're going to talk about your favorite father-son films. We did this a few months ago with mother-daughter movies. So today, because we've had a number of recent films come out with father-son themes, we're going to hear what your favorites are. Right now, we're talking about what's happening in the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles. We're with the directors of the two ports, Long Beach's Mario Cordero, Los Angeles's Gene Ciroccas. We have a listener question that comes from Dan in Sherman Oaks, wondering how China's newer policy of not accepting U.S. recycled materials for recycling is affecting the ports, if at all. Mario Cordero, you want to answer that?
Sure. Clearly, there's been a very negative impact with regard to the recycled material that comes out of this port complex. On the other hand, the good news with that is I think the global movement to address this environmental issue is certainly a positive movement that's taking place, whether it's in the United States or in China. But suffice to say that in terms of the recycled material that was dependent on the China market, there are other markets that are opening to receive that. So I think the bigger question for us right now in terms of our relationship with China is the continuing movement of the importance of that market overall. And again, I will say that the most important trade route for this country, the United States, is the Trans-Pacific trade route, more specifically the trade between the United States and the Asia region, how important that has been. So whether it's recycled materials and other commodities and cargo, again, you're talking about ground zero here in the Southern California complex as it relates to the important trade relationship with Asia overall.
And I'm going to come back with you on the effect of the tariffs on Chinese goods in a moment. But, Gina, I wanted to ask you about the listener question about the recyclables. Are you seeing a significant drop in those materials heading out to China?
Yes, Larry, we are. About a 50% drop since China enacted what they call their green fence policy to try to synthesize the recyclable materials that come into the country by making sure that if you say to ship plastic scrap, that is the only commodity in the container. But what we've also seen is a shift from industry to move more towards semi and finished recyclable products right here in the United States as a way of combating that pressure on the marketplace. And so I think we're seeing a cleaner and more refined product moving out of the country and some folks that are getting into a new space that will help, again, with jobs and opportunities.
So on the issue of tariffs on Chinese goods, what has been the effect over the past year of those increases on the Port of L.A.?
The effect has been uncertainty, number one, not understanding where this policy is going and what it may project for the American worker and the American company. Originally, this policy was drawn up to drive more manufacturing jobs and promote more competitiveness from our companies here in the U.S. In effect, what has happened, we've increased imports. Exports have declined now through the Port of Los Angeles for 13 consecutive months, and the trade gap has widened. So the effectiveness of this policy remains to be seen. In addition, we've seen a run-up on imports to move the cargo into the United States before the tariffs or taxes hit these American companies. And at this point in time, we're witnessing a very soft fourth quarter because our inventory levels from imports are so high, and we need to work those down in our warehouses and distribution centers. And meanwhile, the impact on the exports have been in very important sectors. Agriculture, the recyclables, as we just mentioned, heavy-duty machinery and automobiles.
So you're seeing a lot of ships leaving empty or at the very least, way under capacity after they unload here.
That's right.
Okay. Can you put an economic value on the effect of that?
Yes. We just recently released a study that shows about $35 billion U.S. dollars in consumer impacts have already taken place. That's U.S. companies who are paying these tariffs, finding it necessary to raise their prices to you and me. There's the story of a famous company that makes washers and dryers, and while the washing machine had a tariff placed against it, the dryers did not, but the company still raised the price on those products as well.
All right. And again, the question is there going to be a greater good with some future trade deal that comes out and we're in the process of that, or is this going to be a damage on that trade balance that is lasting? And we don't know.
I think the damage that is done is almost irreparable at this point. I lived and worked in China for 4 years. And while I could walk out of my apartment and buy a DVD of a late-run movie for $1, I know we need reforms in intellectual property and technology. But there are other remedies than what we're doing right now. By trying this bilateral negotiation and use of tariffs in a weaponized fashion, we've basically given sales leads to every other trading company in the world. And even if we were to strike a deal today, that cargo will not come back with the flip of a switch.
Gene Sirocca, Executive Director, Port of L.A. Mario Cordero, Executive Director of the Port of Long Beach. So, Mario, what are you seeing at the Long Beach port in the way of effects from tariffs?
Well, absolutely. We're seeing the same negative impact. And as Gene referenced again, these impacts are needless to say here, significant here in terms of the ports. You know, for the Port of Long Beach, you know, we've had a 19% reduction in terms of our import volume when you compare the first 6 months year to year from 2019 to 2018. And that's even worse when you look to the export numbers, nexus of 46% reduction. Now, in terms of the imports overall beyond Southern California, all you have to look into the industries that have been impacted. You know, whether it's the state of California in terms of the agricultural grain market, or you look to the American shipper, the American farmer, I think the impact has been significant. Obviously, when you look to the American family farmer, there's more bankruptcies being filed today than at a historical mark, and in large part because, again, particularly for small, mid-sized businesses, it's very much a bottom line for them. They cannot afford to take on this increase. And, of course, the lasting commentary, what's the impact to the American consumer? The impact to the American consumer now, as we're approaching December 15th, now we're talking about the whole spectrum of consumer goods being impacted by this tax or this tariff.
Now, in overall tonnage, though, isn't Long Beach having one of its best years?
Well, you know, it is, Larry. I mean, you know, we had a great year, our historical year in 2018. And right now, it looks like we're going to have our second best year. But the question for us is, what could have been? I mean, all this has happened with a great economy. So I think the question that we looked at, what could this economy have been maximized in terms had it not been but for the impacts, but for the business uncertainty that we were having? Now, at the end of the day, we're all having an optimistic view on this, that all said and done, when the two countries come to a deal here, whether phase one or when we complete the total amount of phases on this trade, again, it's going to be advantageous for international trade. But in the meantime, is that soybean market going to come back? The latest, of course, for the state of California, as you know, when we have the grain and nuts, pecans, almonds, the whole spectrum, it is an impact here. And last, I'll say more to the state of California.
Yeah, real briefly.
90% of the wine that's exported from the United States comes from California.
There was a great article in the LA Times about the high-end wine business and the effect of tariffs on the affluent Chinese buyer not being able to, in most cases, afford those wines coming out of California. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. The heads of the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles are with us. We'll continue. And again, if you have a question for our guests, we're at 866-893-KPCC. The Air Talk page, kpcc.org. Back in 1 minute. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. We're very fortunate to have the heads of the two ports in Southern California that make up the largest complex in the country. From Los Angeles, Gene Sirocca. From Long Beach, Mario Cordero. And again, we're taking your calls at 866-893-KPCC. Don in Playa del Rey wonders if the ports have set aside funds to deal with sea level rise. Don recalls reading that by 2050, there'll be significant rise in level. How is that going to affect the ports? Gene, you want to take that on?
Yes, that's a great question. We earlier this year just completed a report at the request of our California State Lands Commission to study the subject of sea level rise. And while we see ourselves in Los Angeles in very good order through the year 2100, there is a concern beyond that. So the work to fortify our wharves, make sure that we have the proper heights and distances, as well as look at combating those areas through our Clean Air Action Plan and our Clean Water Plan, are also front of mind for us.
All right. In Long Beach, same thing. Mario?
Yeah. In fact, just this week, I participated in a sea level rise conference there out of Oakland, when all the ports came together to discuss this issue that's becoming more and more significant for the reasons that Gene stated. But the important thing is, I think it's fair to say that as ports, we're very concerned on this issue, and that we're now working in collaboration to address, again, what would happen mid-century in terms of the increased level of sea level rise. Now, the Port of Long Beach, I will say that many of our construction projects in the last couple of decades has elevated the height of our infrastructure projects, our berths, our wharves, in consideration of this issue. But nevertheless, again, it's not something that we're absolutely not being dismissive of.
Does the breakwater in Long Beach have any effect on this whatsoever?
Well, the breakwater in Long Beach, obviously, again, what we're at now here in Long Beach in terms of the breakwater, I think it's a very positive impact for us in terms of the port community, the port district. And I think with that, that does mitigate the potentials on this. But I think the important conversation is, because of the climate change dynamic and the impact on sea level rise, particularly in the West Coast here in California, is something that, again, deserves a considerable, not only discussion, but a plan of action, of which Long Beach is in the midst of, again, moving forward with what we came out with a report a couple of years ago, back in 2016, of our climate change in terms of our impact on sea level rise. So
I bring up the breakwater because that historic breakwater that goes along Long Beach was constructed to protect the U.S. Navy fleet that was there, and of course not needed for that purpose now. But I just wonder if that were to be removed, as some people would like to see happen, for the waves to return to the beaches of Long Beach, if that would create any sort of vulnerability for the port of Long Beach or not. Again, we're at 866-893-KPECC. Surfcraft asks on the page, is electric-powered rail, not battery, being considered in moving cargo from the ports to distribution centers outside the harbor area? It would keep the long haulers out of the urban areas and out of traffic. Gene?
Yeah, that's one of many aspects of technology that we've looked at. We even, between both ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles, invested in the overhead catenary system for the movement of rail. And while that, again, is in nascent stages, these opportunities to reduce congestion, emissions, and find more efficient and eco-friendly ways of moving the cargo are all what we're practicing today.
Romney in Palm Springs asking a good public radio question, wants the actual numbers. How much tonnage goes through each of the ports? And let's take your most recent numbers. Gene, Los Angeles?
Last year, we moved 9.45 million container units. We call them 20-foot equivalent units, which was the best calendar year on record.
All right. And Mario, for you in Long Beach, what was last year's figures?
Last year was 8.1. So again, you know, for the complex as a whole, as we refer to the San Pedro Bay complex, obviously the nation's largest port complex, moving in excess of 17 million. And I think for on the Long Beach side, value-wise, that comes out to 200 billion worth of cargo. And you put the two ports together, you're approximating 400 billion.
Mario, what about the competition from other ports here in the United States? Because you know, all the green technology that you guys are adopting, it's wonderful, but it has costs that many of your competitors aren't taking on. So is that making some of the other ports along the Gulf or even the East Coast or up in the Pacific Northwest more attractive than your complex?
Well, clearly, and that's a good question and comment, Larry. The competitive edge right now is at a maximum level for us here in Southern California. I think the good news in terms of how we've been able to lead with sustainable development, second to none, has been not only the right decision, but a decision that's created efficiencies for port operations. In terms of our competitors in the East Coast and the Gulf, again, you know, all these gateways are improving their infrastructure and their viability in the interest of moving commerce here in the nation. But on the other hand, again, for us here in Southern California, obviously we spend on the Long Beach side in excess of $4 billion on infrastructure to make sure we continue with the state-of-the-art infrastructure. And as to rail, Larry, our commission here has cleared a budget of anywhere between $1 billion up to $2 billion that we have in mind in terms of future rail endeavors, again, for the whole purpose of keeping our competitive edge here. And, you know, as at this point, when you talk about the Asia cargo movement, you know, if you come to Long Beach or Southern California port complex, we could get that container from Shanghai to Chicago, for example, the Midwest, 11 days earlier than the other options, and okay. Columbus, Ohio, 9 days earlier.
So you've got a regional advantage just based on where it's located. I always wondered, though, you know, whether Mexico would be primed to take on some of the business. I know they have to deal with hurricanes, but so does the Gulf. And Gene, quickly, why isn't Mexico taking a bite out of this?
It really comes down to round-trip economics. While Mexico has built some great infrastructure, including an automated terminal in Lázaro Cárdenas, the two-way traffic isn't there. So while imports have a pretty good route going through that area, it's very difficult to get North American exports back through that gateway.
All right. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being with us. We've talked about a lot over the course of this 40-minute conversation or show, and I think we should just do this regularly. I know your schedules are busy, but let's bring you back together again to take on this array of topics that relate to the port complex of Long Beach and Los Angeles. The executive director of the Port of Long Beach is Mario Cordero. The executive director of the Port of Los Angeles is Gene Soroka. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Just a quick programming reminder. Monday, we'll be bringing you live coverage of the next House impeachment hearing from the Judiciary Committee. I'm going to be away on Monday. John Raby is poised to host if Air Talk makes it on the air, but we don't know because of the hearing. But John will be here if the show's able to get on the air. Film Week comes up next on Air Talk right here on 89.3 KPECC.